This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Here to help us make sense and understand, as folks who are very, very far from the field of battle, as Americans for whom, sadly, the Middle East is often a black hole where it seems that they're always fighting no matter what. And after a while, we just get used to it, I guess. Brian Katulis, he's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, where his work focuses on U.S. national security policy with an emphasis on the Middle East, Iraq, the Arab-Israeli conflict, and Pakistan. His latest book is The Prosperity Agenda. Brian Katulis joins us on the long line from Washington. Brian, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the program.
Absolutely. Happy New Year. How was your holidays?
It was great. It was very restful and had a good break. But unfortunately, now we're back into the mess of the Middle East, as it usually is.
Indeed, we are. And of course, all of this started in December, I guess. And just get us up to speed and give us a 101. I mean, and really bring it to a pedestrian level, Brian, because, you know, most folks, let's face it, if they look at a globe, that they don't know the difference between a West Bank and a Gaza. And I mean, what's going on?
Well, depends on how far you want to go back, if you want to go back to the time of the Bible. But essentially, this conflict between the Israelis and Palestinians has been ongoing for decades and is a consequence of how the British Empire, when it collapsed after the end of World War II, carved up the land. The reaction of many of the countries in the Arab world to the creation of Israel. It's been a long-standing conflict, and this latest flare-up is just, the seemingly unending latest episode in this violence. And essentially, what's going on is a part of the Palestinian territory is the Gaza Strip, which is controlled by an Islamist militant group called Hamas. They've been using this territory to fire rockets into Israel. This has been going on for years. And at one point last year, there was somewhat of a ceasefire, though the hostilities didn't stop. And that ceasefire came to an end right after our Christmas. And essentially for the last 2.5 weeks or so, there's been no halt to the rocket attacks against Israel. And Israel's responded with pretty strong military force, which has killed nearly 1,000 Palestinians. And right now the military operations have resulted with Israel essentially going in with ground troops into some very crowded parts of the Gaza Strip. And there have been efforts by the U.S., by others, by Egypt, to try to come to some sort of cessation of hostilities, but neither of the parties at this point, Israel or Hamas, the Palestinian group, have seen it in their interest to stop this violence.
We're talking with Brian Katulis, a national security expert. His most recent book is The Prosperity Agenda. Brian, let me ask you a couple of things, and you tell me how true they are. We see this in the news that that Israel has to take action. They have no choice because, from Gaza, they're being bombed, and these missiles are coming in, and they've got to go in and basically take care of business and clear out those missiles, and they finally have had enough. How much is that true? That they have no choice, and how much is it true that we also hear that the Hamas in Gaza is actually funded and well connected with Iran?
Well, there's an element of truth to both of those statements. I mean, first, and I'm not a strong endorser of this military operation myself. I think there are certain drawbacks to it, and I think any time there's a military conflict, if there are other ways to avoid that, I think that would be a good thing. In this instance, one of the things that could be done is Egypt, which borders Gaza to the south, could perhaps do a better job in monitoring and stopping the flow of some of these rockets into Gaza that are then used by some of these militant groups. I think there were attempts to do this, and unfortunately, the attacks escalated right after Christmas, and Israel launched this major operation. So, I think military operations for any country should be a last resort. I think Israel, given its experience with Hezbollah and the war it had with the Lebanese Hezbollah group in 2006, knows some of the challenges of trying to fight some of these groups that embed themselves in the civilian crowded population areas, knows that there's potential for blowback, and it's not a great option. And I think people are really hoping that this comes to an end. On the second score, I think there's fairly strong evidence that Hamas gets financial support. I mean, it's been in the open press, Iran openly providing financial support to Hamas after the Hamas group won legislative elections in 2006 in the Palestinian territory. Iran is one of many countries in the Middle East that has provided financial support, and there's some signs that it's provided also some military and perhaps logistical support on some of the terrorist actions undertaken by Hamas. So all of this points to a broader challenge that I think the Obama administration appreciates and will face, is that many of the national security challenges in the Middle East are interlinked, that you can't simply solve the situation in Gaza without addressing what Iran's intentions are. And it's a complicated interlinkage that the new team, once it's assembled, will have to manage.
We're talking with Brian Katulis, a national security expert. He's with the Center for American Progress. Brian, what are the similarities and differences between Hamas and the PLO? And would the West be well served by approaching Hamas like we approached the PLO?
Well, first, I mean, the PLO is a large umbrella organization that has existed for decades, was created, I believe, in the 1950s, and it's largely consistent of it consists of secular Palestinian factions, nationalist factions, established under the leadership of many exiles. So that's the PLO. Hamas is a relatively new phenomenon. It's an Islamist movement, has ties to the broader Muslim Brotherhood movement, which exists in many countries throughout the Middle East, Jordan and Egypt. And it really came to rise in the 1980s, and then it became more prominent in the Palestinian military efforts and terrorist efforts against Israel in the 1990s. So there have been long-standing efforts by countries like Egypt to mediate between the different Palestinian factions, and this has been going on for literally decades. I mean, since the 1990s, to try to bridge some of the divides among the Palestinians. And I'm of the view that though U.S. leadership and power is very important in the Middle East and has been absent on the Arab-Israeli front for far too long, when it comes to dealing with some of these Islamist groups like Hamas, countries like Saudi Arabia, countries like Egypt, led by Muslim leaders, may be much more effective than the Americans may be in trying to bridge some of these divides. And that's not to say we don't have a role or we might not have a role at some point. But I've been skeptical of some arguments that simply say, well, if the U.S. just if U.S. Government sent diplomats to meet with Hamas in the way that former President Jimmy Carter has several times, then, you know, all of these issues will be solved somehow. And I'm a bit skeptical because, largely because of the stances that Hamas has articulated, and I'm not certain that simple, you know, negotiation or dealing with them at this stage will matter very much in terms of their calculations.
We're talking with Brian Katulis. His most recent book is The Prosperity Agenda. He's a national security expert, and we're honored to have him with us live from Washington. Brian, let me ask you, you were talking earlier about that we sort of see the origins of this conflict in modern times after the collapse of the British Empire after World War II. If you look at three of the hottest spots in the world, the Arab-Israeli conflict, the Gaza Strip and Hamas and Israel, Iran, Iraq, that region, and also India and Pakistan, all three related to, you know, the pullout of the British Empire, the collapse of the British Empire. What did they screw up when they left? What happened?
Well, I mean, it's interesting, and I was in India right before Christmas, and this was just after their Mumbai terrorist attacks. And a lot of, I think, the problems that we see today, the geopolitical problems in this territory of the Middle East and South Asia, including India and Pakistan. Much of it, I think, is a consequence of some political disputes and power disputes between people of these regions. And that when you look at the way the British Empire, when it basically closed up shop, the way that borders were drawn, and in some ways in an arbitrary fashion and very quick and not mediated very well between the many different factions that exist in this part of the world, it essentially, you know, created an order that existed for about 60 years in both areas. And I think that order is crumbling in the Middle East, particularly in Iraq, even though the violence is down inside of Iraq. The geostrategic consequences of our war in 2003, I think, will be long felt and dealt with by future administrations, and it won't end with the Obama administration. In a sense, the British Empire, I think, drew borders on a map that didn't necessarily reflect the power balances back then. And this is not to suggest that we should break up Iraq or any part of the Middle East or South Asia. But it is to say that a lot of the challenges are about power sharing between different peoples of these regions, and we need to be clear-eyed in terms of helping to understand what's the best way to mediate between the different factions there, and not try to impose some sort of solution from the outside as an empire might, and really understand what our role is. And that's a challenging thing, and I think we're moving towards that. I think the Obama administration will be much more pragmatic. Under the Bush administration, we had a wildly idealistic and ideological vision that somehow by expanding freedom and democracy, we would wash away some of these centuries-old hatreds and some of these extremist ideologies, and that just simply has not worked.
We're talking with Brian Katulis of the Center for American Progress. We're honored to have him on the program. Let's talk about that very fact, that very issue you just raised, the approach of the Obama administration. And Brian, speak candidly if you can, however much you can. You know these people. You know people in the State Department. One of the I think, criticisms of the Bush administration that really holds water is that they tended to push out a lot of the career people, a lot of the people who were in government who were really, really good at their jobs, and replaced them with people who were not at all good at their jobs.
Right.
And we certainly saw that at the State Department on many levels. So if you could tell us, look at some of the people who are coming in with the Obama administration and tell us, are these the right people? Are these some of the folks who are coming in? Can they handle this?
Well, I it must be said that there's still a lot of lack of clarity about who exactly is going to get which chairs and which areas. There's a lot of this is a favorite pastime here in Washington these days, especially among Democrats and progressives and others, is who's going to get what. And I think the frank answer is that it's only those things that have been formally announced in statements we can be certainly sure of. And even at that, you know, there's appointment processes, as we're seeing some news on the Treasury secretary designee. Anything can come up with potential problems with the appointment process. But a couple of things. First, it's clear that in who has been designated, President-elect Obama is selecting a really high-caliber team. It's not ideological. He's kept on some Republicans, including Secretary of Defense Gates, Jim Jones, who's a National Security Advisor, will be working in the White House. He's worked in several administrations as a military professional. So there's a number of high-caliber picks, and I think it demonstrates two things. First, that President-elect Obama has a great degree of confidence in his own ability to manage all of these talents and personalities. And then second, he recognizes that not only is our economy in tatters, our national security situation is quite difficult. We need very experienced hands. So you've got a really all-star team shaping up, and I think the big challenge will be at the most senior levels, from Vice President-elect Biden, who has a long, you know, history on national security affairs as the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, Senate Foreign Relations Committee. You've got Hillary Clinton, who I think has played an important role in the Armed Services Committee, and then when she was First Lady, went around the world with her husband. You've got a a high-caliber team with Leon Panetta as the CIA designate. And the big challenge will be making sure that a process is set into place to manage all of these things. You know, if you remember the Bush administration, the first term, everybody talked about his all-star team with Dick Cheney as the former defense secretary, Secretary Powell going in as Secretary of State, and Rumsfeld as a former defense secretary. And unfortunately, there wasn't sufficient coordination of the policy process. So it's going to be key, and I know and work closely with some of the people who work with President-elect Obama. And I think one of the bigger challenges they'll have is how to manage all of these talents.
Yeah, yeah. Keeping them all on the same page, yeah, and pointed in the same direction. We're talking with Brian Katulis, national security expert, live from Washington. Brian, at the end of the day, what ideally would you like to see happen in those first 100 days when it comes to national security and overseas priorities? And, you know, we have men and women in harm's way as we speak at this moment.
Right.
What needs to be done right away?
Well, you know, I think one thing that needs to be done, I think item number one, is likely going to be this shift of resources from Iraq to Afghanistan and Pakistan. The administration has been clear about this, and I hope there's a bit more of a debate in our country, because I think it's almost conventional wisdom that more troops should go to Afghanistan. And in the past, I've been supportive of that, but I think it's important anytime we commit more resources to raise questions. So this recalibration from what I've seen as an overinvestment in Iraq and an underinvestment in Afghanistan needs to happen. But how that happens, I think, is vitally important. And simply just throwing more troops or more money at the challenges in Afghanistan won't be the answer. That'll be, I think, priority number one. Number two, I think, you know, with the live war between Israelis and Palestinians, hopefully they'll have some sort of cessation of hostilities by the time President-elect Obama takes the oath of office. It may not be the case, but managing those challenges on the Arab-Israeli front will be an urgent issue. And then third, you know, Iran, I think, is going to be a major challenge in the Middle East, and its nuclear program has been a cause for concern for several years now. So that's just in one slice of the world. If you take a broader view and you look at Russia, its actions around the world, China, and its aspirations for greater influence around the world, and then the continued threats of a possible terrorist attack, which remain very real. And I know here in Washington, we're particularly vigilant this week and next. So it's a handful. It's a really long list of challenges.
Yeah, and on top of all that, an economic crisis. Yeah,
crisis, and all of these things, I think, present a tall agenda for the new president.
Yeah, I mean, when we had our last Great Depression, we at least we were not at war, and we were the world's largest exporter of oil. You know, we were the Saudi Arabia in 1930. You know, we were it. That is not the case now. Brian Katulis is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, the author of The Prosperity Agenda. And before we let you go, we got a couple of minutes. Can you do a little postmortem for us on the Bush administration's and from your perspective? And they just have a week left, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, and we're going to hear from President Bush Thursday night, and I guess his final speech to the nation. But I unfortunately think that his legacy will be tarnished by Iraq, no matter how Iraq turns out, even if, you know, things get substantially better and they have the violence has declined. I think his legacy will be, you know, Iraq and then what happened to us economically. And when historians look back on this period, I think they'll see this as a period when the U.S. had diminished power and influence. Our ability to shape affairs around the world had really declined. And I think we can turn that around. I think, to a certain extent, the Bush administration tried to correct this in the last 18 months or so. There's been more signs of pragmatism on certain fronts like North Korea and how it deals with particular challenges, even Iran. But we're still making up for lost time and lost money and lost lives. And I think that'll be the big challenge. And I think the Bush legacy will be one of taking what could have been a moment to unify not only the country but the world after 9/11 and squandering it, going into an unnecessary war of choice in Iraq, and then trying to pick up the pieces in its closing years.
Brian Katulis, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. His most recent book is The Prosperity Agenda, must reading, fantastic book. Brian, always look forward to it. Thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.